Hello, my name is Ali, and this is another episode of Insight. I'm here with Charlie. How are you?
I'm good. We've been pretty busy guest hosting on other shows. We recently were on the Ramon Navarro episode of the Dirty Bits podcast. We got to do the murdery bits, and it was fun. Did you think it was fun, Ali?
It was fun. It was fun to talk about something a bit lighter than what we normally talk about.
Yeah, our tone's different. We tried to match her tone with our script, which was fun to write because it was a little different.
Tried.
And I was also on an episode recently of Murder Road Trip, which should be out. We talked about a case that's local to the Kansas City area. So that was a lot of fun. And we're always doing episodes of Playlist podcast. But we do those months in advance, so I don't even know that all of the ones we've done have been out yet. So we've been keeping busy.
And just a reminder as well, we're only 2 months out from CrimeCon. Insight will be on Podcasters Row along with some of your other favourite podcasts, such as The Trail Went Cold, Missing Maura Murray, and Thinking Sideways. This year's event will be held in Nashville on May 3rd to 6th. You can still get 10% off a standard ticket by using code INSIGHT at checkout at crimecon.com. 15-year-old Pearl Pinson was walking to a bus stop to make her way to school when she was abducted by an armed man in Vallejo, California, on Wednesday, May 25, 2016. She was last seen bleeding and yelling for help while being dragged and put into a vehicle by a man known to her, and he was later identified as 19-year-old Fernando Castro. The next day, police spotted Castro's vehicle and a police chase ensued. Shots were fired and Castro was killed. Pearl was never seen again. Pearl Pinson was born December 15, 2000, and she resided in Vallejo, California, with her younger brother William, older sister Rose, and their parents, James Pinson and Joyce Mitchell. She was 15 years old at the time of her disappearance. Pearl's friends describe her as fun-loving, skateboard-crazed, and family-orientated, and she'd do anything for her friends and her brother William, who she was extremely close with. They were close to the point the family used to joke they were more like twins and siblings. Pearl was a freshman at Jesse Bethel High School, something that she was looking forward to for some time. In May of 2016, she was almost finished her first year, and by all accounts, she liked school and was doing well there. On the morning of Wednesday, May 25, at around 7 a.m, Pearl packed her black and turquoise backpack and headed off to her normal routine walk to school. It was only a short walk, about 10 to 15 minutes, and it would take her to a pedestrian overpass along Interstate I-780 to a bus stop on Tower Avenue. Witness statements say that an armed Hispanic man, that he attacked her on this overpass. According to witness statements, Pearl was said to be screaming and her face was covered in blood. She was pleading for people to help her, and one man did step in. He was also threatened to be shot and was injured in the process. Obviously, this was a frantic, confusing scene, and witnesses, possibly afraid of being shot, they scrambled for safety. It was then that one single gunshot was heard. Pearl's brother William, who was also on his way to school, he heard this shot. He didn't realise at the time that his sister was involved in this unfolding abduction. Before we continue with the story, a quick word from our sponsor this week, eHarmony. So my friend who tried eHarmony, she got some matches emailed to her, and they were exactly what she was looking for. Other dating apps, you rely on getting to know someone just by their picture. And if you've ever tried other dating apps, you know what that leads to. Conversations that don't go anywhere, random matches that you know you're just not suited to. That's not what you get with eHarmony. eHarmony takes steps that other dating apps don't in order to find you a compatible match. They use years and years of science, data, and psychological research to send you the right matches. And right now, our listeners can get a free month with eHarmony when you sign up for a 3-month subscription. Just enter our code SITE at checkout. Stop waiting and start your journey to a satisfying, meaningful relationship. It can be fun to play around with other online dating apps, but when you're ready to fall in love with someone and have a meaningful relationship, there's one app that's built to find you real love, and that's eHarmony. Come see how eHarmony can change your life. Go to eHarmony.com and get started. Enter our code SITE at checkout.
Police received multiple 911 calls, but by the time they arrived, Pearl and the attacker were gone. This attack had turned into an abduction. Several witnesses told police that the attacker left with Pearl still held at gunpoint on foot. However, due to the large amount of traffic that time of the morning, that seemed like an unlikely scenario, and he certainly wouldn't have made it very far. One witness reported that she had seen Pearl, along with her backpack, being bundled into a car, which honestly sounds more likely. All they found at the scene were drops of blood on the sidewalk and Pearl's cell phone. This would be the last sighting of Pearl Pinson, and because that cell phone was left behind, police had no way of tracking the direction Pearl was taken in. Pearl's family was contacted within 30 minutes. Her sister answered the call, but she thought it was a prank. These kinds of things, they happen to other people. But she thought it through and she went ahead and called the school. And when she was told that Pearl never made it to school that day, she realized it wasn't a prank. An Amber Alert would not be issued until the next day around 2:20 in the afternoon, which was nearly 32 hours after Pearl was abducted. This was largely due to the conflicting reports of witnesses at the scene. We see this happen, and people get really upset when they see that there's a missing child and there's not an Amber Alert. So for those who are not aware, there are certain guidelines to issuing an Amber Alert. They are just guidelines. So jurisdictions can issue Amber Alerts without every piece being in place, but most follow the same guidelines from the Department of Justice. This is to avoid overuse of the system, which would then cause the general public to more or less ignore them, making it just an ineffective system. So first, there needs to be a reasonable belief by police that an abduction has taken place. The idea that the kid may have just wandered off can't be on the table. It has to be pretty certain that there was an abduction to begin with. Then the person needs to be 17 years or younger, though that number can be lower in some jurisdictions. There needs to be a belief that the child's life is in imminent danger of injury or death. So obviously, Pearl's abduction fit all of those. But there's a last piece that they need, and it's a pretty important one, and that's that there needs to be sufficient descriptive information to make the Amber Alert effective. By this, they mean they need enough information that it would be useful to have the public keeping their eyes out. So this includes the name and description of the child, the description of the abductor, and preferably a vehicle. The Amber Alert was issued after they had confirmation of the vehicle, and we'll talk about that in a sec.
By this time, Pearl had completely vanished into thin air. Based on CCTV footage on the bridge, police were able to identify the car as a gold 1997 four-door Saturn, and then they traced this car back to its owner, who was 19-year-old Fernando Castro. Castro lived in the same neighbourhood as Pearl, only three blocks apart from each other, and it was said that Pearl and Castro knew of each other. Now, there were rumours that the two were boyfriend and girlfriend. However, following searches of both their social media and cell phone records, no relationship between the two of them was found. Pearl's family said they vaguely recalled hearing of Castro in passing, but he was not familiar to them. This seems to be supported by police forensically checking the phone records of both Pearl and Castro. There was just no record that the two had ever contacted each other. The delay in releasing the Amber Alert may have severely affected locating Pearl. And we'll see that with what's to come. 32 hours is a long time in an abduction case. 32 hours could mean that they could be pretty much anywhere in the whole country. 32 hours could mean the difference between finding a missing person alive and safe or never seeing that person again. Vital evidence can be destroyed. As I said, 32 hours is a really long time. However, the Amber Alert did bring in tips. Witness sightings reported that Pearl was seen in the local area and as far away as Washington, but these leads were never proven correct. Surveillance video was able to track Castro's movements. He was next seen driving his vehicle 2.5 hours after Pearl's abduction at 9:30 in the area of the San Rafael Bridge in Marion County, California. And that's approximately 25 miles or 40 kilometres from where Pearl disappeared. It appeared in the surveillance videos that Castro was the only person in the vehicle and Pearl was nowhere to be seen. In saying that, though, there was obviously no way to tell whether she might have been lying down in the back seat or in the trunk of the car.
The next day, Thursday, May 26th, Castro was spotted in St. Louis Obispo County, which is about a four-hour drive from where Pearl was last seen. The California Highway Patrol and the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office began to chase his vehicle at a high rate of speed. Castro drove into a residential area, and the police had put down road spikes down into the road, which he drove over and blew out his tires. That caused him to crash into a mobile home, and he abandoned his vehicle. He got out of the vehicle and ran into the mobile home. The occupant of the home was there, but was able to escape unharmed. Castro then attempted to steal a pickup truck and began firing on police as he was trying to get away. Police returned fire, and in the process, they killed Castro. Possibly the only person who knew where Pearl was had just been killed. And not only was there no trace of Pearl in his vehicle, here we are hundreds of miles away from where she was last seen. She could literally be anywhere. Now, there was a little bit of evidence that placed Pearl anywhere after she was last seen on the overpass, and that was some blood that was found in the trunk of Castro's car that matched Pearl. Aside from knowing Castro was last with Pearl, that was it. That's all they had. No motive, no direction to look in on what he may have done with her, nothing. Forensic examination of the blood found in the trunk of the car was consistent with the injury she suffered at the time of the abduction, but it didn't appear that there was a life-threatening amount of blood loss. In a press conference with the sheriff's department, they indicated they firmly believed that Pearl was still alive. Pleased to return, Pearl headlined the news, and a family friend put forward a $10,000 reward for information that led to Pearl's whereabouts. There has been little public information released by police about Castro. What we know is he had a minor criminal history at the time of the abduction, and nobody's come forward to say that he was dealing with drug addiction or mental illness. Some statements say that Castro may have been involved in gang-related activity, but this hasn't been corroborated. And all of this is unusual with such a violent abduction. Usually, you'd think we were looking at someone with a criminal history or some type of contentious history with the victim. There doesn't seem to be that here. At most, I've seen Pearl's neighbors confirm that they'd see him walking the neighborhood before, and like Allie said, they were somewhat known to each other. Aside from that, there's just rumor and speculation.
But seeing him walk the streets isn't really unusual. As we said, he only lived 3 blocks away from Pearl.
Right. I wouldn't think him walking a couple blocks away from his house, even if he was near her house, would really raise anybody's suspicions.
So police searched Castro's home after the abduction and before he was killed. There they found disturbing notes, which are believed to be related to Pearl's abduction. The contents of the notes have never been released. Also, there was other undisclosed information found in his home that pointed investigators towards a particular location. Also, in the vehicle, it's been said that there was a receipt with handwritten directions on it leading to Jenner, California. And this was also the location police were interested in after the evidence found in Castro's home. Now, Jenner is a small coastal town. It's approximately a 90-minute drive from Vallejo, where Pearl was abducted. Investigators also found pings on Castro's cell phone that pointed towards him being in the Jenner area soon after the abduction. So volunteers reviewed hundreds of hours of CCTV footage, and they turned up a recording of Castro at a gas station on the day after Pearl's abduction. The gas station was approximately 10 miles or 16 kilometres from Jenner. Again, there was no sign of Pearl on the footage. A large land and air search was conducted for Pearl, involving state park officials, local law enforcement authorities and the FBI. On Saturday, May 28th, 65 law enforcement officers searched a 25-square-mile area near Jenner, but nothing was found. The search effort was hampered by a large amount of distance that Castro travelled before he was killed. We're talking about 350 miles or 563 kilometres. It was hard for police to narrow down which areas to search. He literally travelled up and down the coast of California. Investigators were reported as saying that at this point, Pearl could be in another state. She could have been passed on to another person. All they knew was that Castro was interested in the Jenner area for some reason, and he was seen on tape near there. Police went back to the surveillance videos and spent hours and hours watching and re-watching in the case that they missed something. They went to the areas that Castro's car was seen in the days after the abduction and questioned people in the area. They hung up flyers and hoped that someone saw something, but no further solid leads came through.
Months after Pearl's abduction, law enforcement were still confident that there was a chance she could be found alive. Investigators have said there is nothing to suggest that Castro had murdered Pearl, and they were going to continue to treat the investigation as a missing persons case, not as a homicide, unless the evidence suggested otherwise. On the 25th of every month, Pearl's family held a candlelight vigil, and they run a Facebook page in hopes that if they keep Pearl's name and face out there, they'll eventually get some answers. We'll post links to this Facebook page in our Facebook group and on our website. Since the early days of the investigation, Pearl's sister Rose has become the spokesperson of the family. She has been vocal about the family's frustration with the investigation and the fact that their only lead to where Pearl is, Castro, was shot and killed before he could be questioned.
And if you want to hear more about the investigation and from Pearl's sister Rose, there is an excellent episode on the Vanished podcast about Pearl's disappearance that I highly recommend.
In the past almost 2 years since Pearl's disappearance, several theories have been raised, some by the police, some by the family, and some by online posters in various forums. One theory is that Pearl was abducted by Castro due to some connection between the two. For this theory to work, though, Castro and Pearl would have had to know each other better than what we know they did, and that the rumors would have to be true that they had some relationship, but apparently did so without ever calling each other or being active on social media together, which doesn't sound likely. But it's also possible that Castro wanted a relationship. Perhaps he made romantic advances towards Pearl, only for her to turn him down. That on the day of the abduction, maybe he approached her and she wanted him to leave her alone. Maybe he had planned it because of being turned down. And in the process, he became enraged. Things may have gotten more violent than he intended when he was trying to get her in the car. She was fighting back. She became more vocal and she got hurt. This is causing the attention of the bystanders. this confused or panicked Castro, and that's when he pulled out his gun, either to frighten off the bystanders or to further convince Pearl to get in the car. What happened after this? Well, this theory, it goes into several sub-theories. You know, he killed her because of the rejection, or he was holding her captive somewhere. There's a lot here that is really just based on speculation.
The second theory involves Castro developing an unhealthy interest in Pearl to the point of obsession, and he had begun stalking her. That he may have been following her and knew that she took the same route every day at the same time, and he chose the day of her abduction as the day to take her. Again, what happened after this has split into two sub-theories, but the most likely outcome in this scenario would be that he may have murdered her for rejecting his advances and dumped her body somewhere, most likely in Jenna. And this area was somehow overlooked or missed in the numerous searches in that area. Subscribers to this theory used the shootout with police as evidence that this showed he had nothing else to lose. He had killed Pearl, who he thought that he was in love with and knew that he was going to be arrested, and they knew he'd be in prison for her murder for a very long time. The third theory is one that both police and the family firmly believe may have been what happened to Pearl. As no body has ever been found in the case, there is thought to the notion that Pearl may be alive and being held as a sex trafficking victim, that she's being held against her will and being passed from person to person, that maybe Castro knew individuals or groups involved with sex trafficking and sold her to make some fast money. This is a frightening prospect because she may not even be in the United States anymore, or she could be literally anywhere. According to the National Human Trafficking Hotline, and again, we will supply a link to this website because it is a frightening read when you go through these statistics, but it also has links on what we can do to help to stop this from happening. But according to the National Human Trafficking Hotline, since 2007, there have been reports of over 22,000 sex trafficking cases inside the United States.
Investigators have not commented further on Castro or what they believe his motive to be. You have to wonder if it's in those letters they haven't released. While Pearl's family and friends have been extremely vocal about her, Castro's family and friends have remained tight-lipped and have closed ranks. They've not been speaking to the media. The tips coming in for Pearl's case have dwindled, but the case is still active. Investigators are also asking for information on Fernando Castro. They are interested in where he was known to frequent, who he's associated with, or where he may have visited in Jenner in the past. At a vigil shortly after she was abducted, her sister Rose said, quote, "She's always happy. She loves to laugh. Loves to ride her long skateboard." Their brother William is the one who heard the shot and the scream for help, and reportedly he struggles to deal with what happened to his sister with probably some added weight of possible guilt that he heard the attack but couldn't do anything to help. Now, remember, she was 15 at the time and he was her younger brother, so obviously, at 14, you're not expected to do anything here, but it still is hard to be a survivor of something like this. After her disappearance, Pearl's dog Misty would get out of the house and go to the overpass where Pearl was kidnapped until the family moved from that house, and she also started having seizures overnight. Pearl was bright. She loved animals. She was considering studying to become a veterinarian or a firefighter. Linda Kingston, the principal at Jesse M. Bethel High School, where Pearl was enrolled at the time of her abduction, told the Daily Republic, quote, "She has such a big heart. She is very articulate and concerned about justice. She is a feisty, strong woman. Nothing can keep Pearl down. Her spirit is way too strong."
Pearl was 15 years old at the time of her disappearance and would now be 17 years old. She was 5'3" and weighed 130 pounds. She was wearing a black and white zip-up hoodie, a grey sweater, sweatshirt, black pants, Nike turf shoes that were pink, black and white, and a black Raiders beanie. She was carrying a distinctive black and turquoise backpack with a Joker emblem on it. Police are urging anyone who may come across the backpack to contact law enforcement immediately. Pearl has green eyes and her naturally brown hair was dyed turquoise at the time of her disappearance. She has a pierced lip. Pearl's Charlie Project profile also makes reference that she may need medical help, but doesn't make it clear that if this was for a previously diagnosed condition or if it was from the violent abduction. Anyone with information about the case can call the Solano County Sheriff's tip line on 707 784 1963. Or a 24-hour tip line monitored by a private investigator may also be reached at 707 421 7090. The family have set up an email for tips at helpfindpearlpinson@gmail.com. A Pinson family friend has offered a $10,000 reward for information leading to the closure in the case.